This is a UOA on campus production. This podcast was recorded on Kaurna land. We acknowledge the Kaurna people as the original custodians of the land and pay our respects to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
You'll want to make a note.
Should you be taking notes or something?
You got a pencil? Write this down, quick.
Why aren't you taking notes?
Write this down.
Aren't you going to write this down?
Did you need me to take notes?
Please take note.
Hello and welcome to Take Note, the podcast where we give you the best notes on everything you need to know from the day you start uni to the day you graduate. I'm your host and current honours student, Shannon, and this episode falls on Neurodiversity Celebration Week, so we'll be talking about disability, study, and how they go together. We'll start off this episode by chatting with psychology tutor and PhD candidate Tessa about her study tools as a neurodivergent person and ways you can get support if you need it. We'll also be speaking with students Grant and Jack about how to be an ally to people with disability. Disability can come in many forms, and many of them aren't actually visible from the outside. In fact, an estimated 15 to 20% of the population are neurodivergent. Neurodiversity takes many different forms and can include things like autism spectrum disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. These diagnoses can mean that study looks a little different for neurodiverse people, and we wanted to make sure all of you had all the tools you needed for success. So today we're joined by Tessa, who is a neurodivergent person with ADHD and dyslexia, and is also a current tutor in the School of Psychology and a PhD candidate, to chat about her experience as a student with a disability. So thank you so much, Tessa, for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Shannon.
So first of all, could you tell us a little bit about your experience with neurodiversity?
Yeah. So in terms of, understanding my neurodiversity, dyslexia was something that I received a diagnosis for when I was quite young in childhood. And while there were times when it was challenging, mostly I was really supported at school. My brother and my dad are also dyslexic. So while I felt like there were obstacles and that it was something that was sort of unique to me, it was also something that I experienced in a community and had a sense of belonging towards as well. However, my ADHD diagnosis happened a little bit later on in life. And I think this will be a relatable experience for a lot of women particularly.
Totally.
But also just young adults that are starting to navigate increasingly complicated lives, university, navigating rentals, more complicated adult relationships and employment. And at that point in time, sometimes ADHD that was otherwise managed quite well with environmental supports, and similarly autism, might start to become more challenging or more at the forefront of people's experience. So that was definitely the case for me, and I didn't actually receive my diagnosis until I was towards the end of my undergraduate studies. Luckily, I did have my dyslexia diagnosis, so there were lots of supports that were available to me, regardless of that ADHD diagnosis being a bit of a late one.
Yeah, and so for those that aren't maybe so familiar with either ADHD or dyslexia, would you better just sort of tell us what that looks like for you or what it can look like for someone else?
Yeah, definitely. So in terms of dyslexia, reading is a pretty time-consuming process for me. I tend to exert a lot of cognitive energy, and I'm just never going to be able to read as quickly as my peers. So I tend to use screen readers. Otherwise, I just get a really bad headache. It's just kind of exhausting. And in terms of ADHD and similarly autism, people's presentations can vary a lot, and my experience might be completely different to someone else's experience. So I think that's an important caveat. But I find that time management, focusing on topics that I might find a little bit dry or less interesting, is really challenging. I tend to get time blindness, so I'll think that I've been doing something for 15 minutes and I might have been doing it for about an hour sometimes. And I think that these are characteristics that are relatable to a lot of people, but the magnitude is really turned up. So that can be helpful in explaining it to people, but it's also important to acknowledge that there is an amplification and there is a really genuine impairment for some people in terms of navigating that. I also think there are positives in that I have this really incredible ability to hyper-focus on topics that I do find interesting, which is really comparable to like a flow state. So that can be a really great advantage.
Particularly in study.
Definitely in study. It's just something that I wish I could turn on and off a little bit more knowingly at times.
Yeah. And so with that in mind, how do you find approaching study is different for you? Because like you said, there may be some sort of unique barriers for you that you sort of have to navigate your own way through.
Yeah. So for me, the biggest one, especially in undergrad, because I was very aware of my dyslexia, was to approach readings differently. And sometimes that might look like just using a screen reader. Other times it might be that I was really aware that the concepts weren't as easy to grasp based on a reading. So I would pretty proactively seek out complementary resources. I would try and find a YouTube video, or similarly podcasts are another really great way to sometimes immerse yourself in concepts and remove that reading barrier. And then I would encourage people to do what I did and then go back and revisit the reading once you've got that new lens, because a lot of the time there are reasons that they want you to do that reading, but sometimes that'll just help put together pieces that might have otherwise just not come as easily. I also rely a lot on visualization. I tend to use the Google Images tab a lot sometimes. I just need to see a model as opposed to just reading about a concept. So I'm pretty proactive in, you know, how do I visualize that? Even in my note taking, sometimes it might be a picture more so, or a diagram, more often than dot points. That really serves me. And I think there are a few different strategies. I know for a lot of people with ADHD, you know, using medication in a way that complements their study is a really great resource, and making sure they're timing their medication to really complement that and those demands. But structuring, you know, being aware of limitations in terms of time, how much energy you might have for study, and when you're going to have that focus and that cognitive energy sort of at its most effective.
Yeah, and it's interesting because these are, I'm sure there's a lot of people that can take these skills beyond just people that maybe have ADHD or dyslexia. I think these are all really incredible study things. And I think it's one of those things, once you start, you know, opening the breadth of ways of accessing study, you know, it helps everyone. It's not just a particular group that gets that benefit from that. And I'm sure like a lot of people listening to this that maybe don't have neurodiversity was thinking that's a fabulous idea for ways to help supplement their own study.
Definitely. And we talk a lot about universal designs for learning. And it's, like you said, these, you know, approaches and strategies that generally help everybody. It's just that we might rely on them a little bit more than other people.
And how did you find approaching those discussions about disability to sort of, I guess, explain what you're experiencing, to get that support when you wanted to sort of access that extra help?
Yeah, I was quite proactive and felt very comfortable in my disclosure. So in that regard, I found that I was really supported quite quickly, and it was responded to really well in the university environment. It helped me in terms of finding a community as well. And I had reached out quite early to an Ask Adelaide staff member, and I had mentioned in passing that I had dyslexia, and they happened to have it as well. And they were able to refer me to the disability support services, and, you know, that happened quite organically for me. And I think that for a lot of people navigating neurodisability and neurodiversity in primary school can be quite stigmatizing and it can be quite a hostile environment. And that's a similar experience for a lot of people in the workforce. And generally, while it can be challenging, university is one of the, you know, safest and I would say supportive places for development for people with neurodisability. And I think that that's a really great opportunity for people to develop their own self-determination and confidence and learn what works best for them so that later on in life, if they do feel that they're being discriminated against in the workforce, they really understand and know that that's not about them. Mm. That's about the organisation that they work for.
And they also know what it feels like to be supported, so they're able to recognise when they're not getting what they need from their maybe their employer or whatever company that they're in as well.
Definitely. So I think that, you know, if you feel like you're in a place to talk about it and to disclose where it's safe and where you feel like it empowers you, I think the university is a really wonderful place to do that.
And students may have heard of something called a disability support access plan or a disability access plan. So how does something like an access plan work at the uni?
The idea of the access plan is to make reasonable adjustments. So we talked a lot about strategies that you might apply to yourself and study tips that, you know, everyone might find useful. But access plans that are provided from disability support services, they're designed to ensure that students with disabilities and conditions of various different types do have reasonable adjustments where those strategies we were talking about earlier might not be enough and students might really need extra resources and support to overcome barriers. So some of the reasonable adjustments that are available to students are differences in terms of attendance. They might not be able to attend as many tutorials for whatever reason, and it might remove that barrier to needing to go and get a medical certificate, which could be a really time-consuming and stressful process for someone. Yeah, especially for someone who has a chronic health condition as well. So that's something that might be accessible. Extensions are something that many students with access plans might have access to. So it might just be that, you know, without needing to fill out the same paperwork, you might be eligible for a 3 to 5 day extension. And that's a really helpful resource for students who are navigating chronic conditions or time management barriers. Alternative exam arrangements. I think a lot of people talk about the dreaded Waverley exams, and I'm quite fortunate in that I've never had to do one because I do my exams here on campus and I have access to an adaptive technology room where I can use a screen reader instead of, you know, the hustle and bustle of Waverley Showground, which is really nice. But that's, you know, sort of just the tip of the iceberg. There's formatting differences, external services, things like translators that are available, transcript captioning, and, you know, there are a variety of different visible and invisible disabilities, and people with mobility difficulties are also, you know, really well catered for by the disability support services. This definitely supports in terms of physical mobility as well.
Yeah. And what are some of the most effective methods of study that you have found work for you as going through undergraduate into postgraduate? There's a lot of study going on.
Yeah, there was. There was a lot of study going on. Taking breaks is something that I think is really important in terms of that focus and those, you know, cognitive resources and energy that you might have being a little bit different. And sometimes that might just look like a shorter study session. Sometimes that might be that you do 3 subjects instead of 4 and, you know, you modify your workload. And I know for some people it's like, oh, I really want to get finished in that 3 years. But that extra year in the great scheme of your life and the mental health that you have throughout uni, it might be worth slowing down and you might take a little bit more in. And enjoy the process a little bit more.
Totally.
I think using software has been a really important strategy from me. Things like extensions on your web browser that can, you know, serve as a screen reader if you don't have access to some of the software that is more commonly used by people with dyslexia or visual impairment. And using apps, like I think I have an app at the moment that turns my papers into, you know, sort of a podcast sounding audiobook.
Oh, God.
yeah, some of them are expensive, but I think where a lot of these resources are also free and readily available to people. So look for any opportunity where you can remove a barrier, and it's a barrier that you really don't need to overcome. Like, use things like Grammarly or, you know, similar software in terms of tidying up your grammar and your spelling. You know, it doesn't really matter how much I struggle with my comma use. At the end of the day, what matters is that I understand the concepts that I'm writing about, and I can explain them, and I can apply those theories to my research. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes there are barriers that you really need to be able to overcome, and sometimes you can just use supports.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they don't really measure any kind of intelligence or self-worth as much as, you know, there might be sort of an expectation that maybe they do in high school.
Yeah. And, you know, as a psychology PhD candidate as well, you've sort of got, I guess, access to another sort of knowledge of how the brain works, which must be incredibly fascinating. But within that, are you aware of forms of study that best suit people with, say, ADHD, dyslexia, or other neurodivergent disorders that has sort of been highlighted as really particularly helpful?
My biggest advice would be to understand your own, I guess, neurotype and what works for you, and then to really apply whatever supports and accommodations you can to make those work for you and to work with your neurotype. You know, there's no prize for powering through barriers when you can make really reasonable adjustments for yourself and modifications, and you're not less than because of that. But I think, you know, sensory modifications are another thing that I think broadly for people with ADHD and autism are really important, and that might just be managing the environment that you're studying in. It might be that you come in for one day and you stack your timetable so you have less time on campus, or you might want to spend more time on campus. You might use focus music, or you might just need a TV on in the background. You might need noise cancelling headphones. Like, work out what serves you and then use whatever resources really support you.
Yeah. And so if someone's listening and is thinking, you know what, I could really use this support, where are the places that they can actually go and what is available to them?
So the Disability Illness and Divergence Association is a great, you know, student-led support that I would really encourage people to follow on social media and to connect with and engage with. And I know for some people, socialising might feel like a bit of a daunting expectation and sometimes burden, depending on how it serves you and your diversity. But I do think it's a great resource to just know it's there and to engage with it in whatever way suits you. And the disability supports that the uni have are incredible. Like we talked about at the top of this episode, for some people, a diagnosis might come later on in life when you're navigating the many challenges of adulthood for the first time. And it might not be that you have an ADHD diagnosis or that you have an autism diagnosis. And I think reaching out to the disability support services while you're navigating that process can be really helpful as well. And they will work with you in terms of finding some kind of interim support, because we know that diagnoses can take a long time.
Years sometimes.
Yeah. So they might be able to direct you in terms of, you know, getting something in the interim with the support of your GP. So it might be about working out what you think would help you as well before you sort of go into that process, and understanding what reasonable adjustments are available and working out how to get those in terms of what's going to empower you the most, versus sort of going in with this huge to-do list that can be really overwhelming on top of everything.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Really appreciate your expertise in this area and your sharing of your experience with us.
Thank you.
Hey there, fellow students. My name's Chris and welcome to Mindful Moment, brought to you by the Student Health and Wellbeing Team. Navigating the world with a disability can be challenging, but with the support of an access plan and an incredible disability advisor, as a neurodivergent individual, having these support networks has empowered me to thrive in ways I never thought possible. Your differences are strengths, not weaknesses. Seek support, embrace your unique abilities, and let's rewrite the narrative together. Thanks for taking this moment with me. Your well-being is important, and until next time, take care and be kind to yourself. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at UofAStudentWellbeing.
Great way you can show your support for someone with a disability is through allyship and making the space you're sharing more accessible to them. It can take many different forms, but it is a key part of making sure life at university is accessible and welcome to all. And we're joined today by student Grant, who is a person that lives with ADHD, PTSD and chronic pain, and Jack, who has autism, to chat about allyship and accessibility on campus. Thank you both so much for joining me on today's episode.
It's great to be here.
Thanks for having me.
Why is it important for us as a university community to provide allyship?
I guess I can start with that. I think allyship can be an important thing because even though Grant and I here are living with our assorted disabilities, and as with many people at university are, we're still people and we're still capable of studying our degrees. And I think being able to welcome anyone into the university community allows workforces to be filled with diverse ideas, and that allows for creativity to blossom and things like that, where you just don't get that if you try and stick everyone into that same box. So being able to just express yourself and be who you are in university without having that stifling pressure is just a really great way to boost that kind of diversity.
Yeah, no, I do absolutely agree with that. And I think one of the other big things with allyship is that it can like break down barriers and challenge stereotypes, and it can create like a more equitable and compassionate academic environment for all of us to be in. You know, that sense of understanding and empathy, you know, among students, faculty and staff.
Totally. And what are some of the ways someone can actually show allyship for someone with a disability?
Speaking from experience, I think just talking to the person is the best way to go about it, but definitely like a one-on-one situation kind of thing. You don't want to just bring it up in a group of people if they're not someone who's comfortable with it. Like, I mean, personally, I am, and I wouldn't really care, but I've got other friends who definitely would care, and just talking with them privately on that, something like that, even if it's through like DMs or just chatting, pulling them aside and whatever. Don't like single them out, I guess, in the group and see what you can do. And then if you go and see something like, oh, I can get this friend to do that too, and then you ask them, is it okay if I talk to them about this? And they'll say yes, and they'll say no, and then you go, okay. You don't try and go against what they're wanting at the time, I guess, because then it kind of feels like you're being looked down on if people just disagree and go like, oh, I know what's best for you, because you don't always. But how about you, Grant?
Yeah, no, I actually agree with you, because I think you brought up a good point there about listening and being heard. And I think these are two different values. Often we'll listen, but then go and try to provide advice or try to fix a problem, where sometimes all what is needed is just being heard. So listening, being heard, paraphrasing, reflecting, using emotions and things like that in that conversation. And you don't need to fix someone's problem. You just sometimes, that person just needs to be heard and listened to. And that's often quite enough. And I think you touched on a really good point there by bringing that up.
Yeah, just listening is just a powerful thing to help, not even with anyone with disabilities, anyone in general, just people just want to complain sometimes and they want to have someone to listen to them. So that's a great tool for you to use for anyone.
Absolutely. And it can be a really nice thing to offer someone some help if they look like they might need it. But there are times when people should probably just let someone, particularly someone with a disability, just be and try not to help them. So what, you know, what does that look like?
I guess we kind of touched on this a little bit just then with if a person says, stop, even if you think this might be the best scenario for them, if they're telling you they don't want that, then like even if you do make them do it, there's going to come into the mindset with, I don't want to do that. This isn't what I wanted. And that's, again, applies to everyone, not even just people with disabilities. But I think not trying to go behind someone's back and trying to sign up for this. What I would do is try and, I guess, make them aware, like University of Adelaide has a disability support people who are great for providing like an alternate exam spot and different kind of extra provisions in class that don't necessarily change the work, but they change the accessibility for it. So you could even bring up that again privately, probably don't do it in a group, but just bring it up to them. Oh, what do you think about this? And then if they already know about it and they're like, oh, I don't want to do that because it makes me feel like I'm being treated differently. Or maybe they go, oh, I didn't know about that. I actually will look at that. And that can just be a great way to open up that conversation. But, you know, you're not this person's parent, unless you are. And then, man, go ahead. Don't try and be that kind of, I guess, condescending figure to them. Like, let them be their own person. But do definitely try and make them aware of different resources available to them. Just, again, in a chat, in a text, or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's exactly what you said. You know, independence is, like, something most people with disabilities highly value. And I think people can, you know, try to, once again, fix people's problems, and that can come across as condescending. So I think, you know, my advice would be that, look, having a disability can be pretty lonely, so don't think, like, people don't want support and help. But just ask, you know, like, do you want some help or do you want some support? And don't be, you know, put back or feel upset if someone says no. Just accept that. And if they do say yes, just ask them what that support and help might look like. So, yeah.
Basically, don't assume that you know what's best for someone else or that what they might need.
Just ask. Worst they can say is no.
And this does sort of lead us into accessibility, and that can take many different meanings and forms. So how would you describe accessibility for you?
I mean, that it's so dependent on the different, like, person, whoever it is. I guess to me, these days, the biggest, I guess, factor hindering me is my inability to tolerate, like, loud noises and things like that. So, you know, I don't go clubbing because I can't go clubbing, and, you know, I can live without it, it's fine. But even just a university event that's too loud, I might, accessibility might look like having an avenue to just walk out for a second and take a breather, or having my headphones with me and putting them on if it's too loud. And even on an exam arrangement kind of thing, accessibility is being able to have a smaller room of people instead of the big exam hall where, you know, hearing all these pencils moving and everything, it just, I guess, gets on my nerves to an extent. And accessibility is being open to different options for someone that, again, isn't necessarily taking away how much they have to do. I'm still sitting the same exam, and it's not like I've got different questions, unless I end up failing and have to do a different exam. but I haven't got to that stage yet. But yeah, just having those different options to do the same thing, essentially. And, you know, if someone was in a wheelchair, like, a wheelchair ramp is a different option to stairs. They lead to the same goal, and there's no reason why you can't have both of those avenues going into it. So I think that's what it looks like to me, is having those options. How about you?
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people think about accessibility as being like lifts and stairs and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And but disabilities often can be more than that in terms of what people need. You know, like for me, I need to be able to move around and easy access to toilets and things like that. So I think accessibility is different for everyone in terms of what, you know, people are looking for. And, you know, it's just being mindful of that, because, you know, stigma does come along sometimes with those things, you know, especially with, you know, even now I find it hard to ask for extensions because sometimes people will judge you or give you that kind of like, oh, why are you asking for an extension? But I sometimes need more rest and suffer from a bit of fatigue. So, yeah, I think it's just understanding of the unique nature of people with disabilities.
Yeah. And have you found tools or services that have made university and study life more accessible to you?
I mean, I mentioned it earlier, Disability Support at Adelaide Uni is honestly such a helpful service. Shout out Linda in the team there. I think that was probably the first person I ever saw at uni because I came in just before I started my studies, and she was great at just going like, all right, this is what's available. What do you need? What maybe you don't need? And you basically set up some sort of like access plan, it's called, and it basically just lets your coordinators know of all your courses. This is me. This is what's different about me. And this is how I'm going to be moving towards that. It will let them know if you might have a different exam provision. It might let you know if you have to leave a class for a minute, like Grant does sometimes potentially. So you can have that information directly on there, and there's no argument, I guess, from the coordinator. It's like, nah, I don't want to give you that, because it's like, no, that's my plan. You don't, you can't just disagree. Yeah, I think they're probably the number one service for people with disabilities. There's obviously lots of different clubs that are very welcoming, and I honestly find that majority of the people just at the uni in general are pretty welcoming to me, at least. And I've been able to make lots of great friends here. So just, I guess, immersing yourself in the community, I find, is a good way to just feel that sense of belonging.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have Annie, who's my support coordinator, and she's just been absolutely fantastic, like, since I've been here, and just being able to listen and also advocate for different things. The other one I would really recommend is counselling services. I've had to rely on them, like, immensely, especially during tough times, and I've just been, like, just crying, just going, oh, my God, I've got so much work to do, and they offer, a brilliant service just to be able to go and talk to people and just being heard while you're going through that moment, even though everything feels like the world is just crashing down. And I talked to Stan there, who's been really great since I've been here at uni.
Yep. And actually, I did want to add on this too, because I thought it's an aspect of disability support that not everyone, I guess, realizes. It's not all for permanent disabilities. Sometimes you have a disability that's lasting for 6 months. It could be a broken leg, it could be a mental health episode. These things will heal, but during that 6 month period, you might need extra provisions, and you can go to disability support for that. It's not just for permanent stuff that's sticking with you. And again, counseling, you can go to them, like, if it's a temporary, you can go to them if you don't have it, you can just always go to them. and they're great for helping with that kind of thing. And everyone's going to need some support at some point in their life. It might not even be during your university journey, but I can guarantee that like 90% of the people listening to this podcast will eventually need some help, and it's about seeking that help. So of course, there's lots of external services that university doesn't even provide. I found personal therapy is a great thing, and that's really helped me come into my own as a person. So just looking into those avenues, and definitely thanks for mentioning counseling, Grant, because I completely forgot about them, but they're also great people to talk to.
Yeah, and just lastly, what is like your favorite way that someone has shown allyship towards you since you've been at university?
I think just welcoming me into this university. Like, there's times where my disability is obvious to some people and isn't as obvious to other people. It's depending on how aware they are of autism in general. And it's when they are aware, and like, you can kind of tell, it just doesn't change how they're looking at you at all. And that's just a really nice way to feel welcomed a bit, because again, in high school, it was kind of, you could see how people would treat you slightly differently compared to others. And although it often wasn't even malicious, like it's just, I guess, nice being part of the gang, for lack of a better word, and just feeling that sense of welcome. And I think, yeah, in terms of, I guess, allyship, I keep plugging in, but disability support was definitely a really great way to just, again, advocate. If I need this done, I had a situation. I won't go into detail about it, but this piece was there to advocate for me in that situation and end up, yeah, just that feeling that welcoming in the university is just number one thing I'd say for me.
Yeah, I think you know, I will go back to what I we were talking about at the beginning, which was like just being listening and someone, you know, hearing what you're saying, I think is probably the most important thing when it comes to people with disabilities is being heard. But, I did mention some people before, which was Annie and Stan, that have like, you know, really helped me, you know, navigate university life. And one of the things I do want to mention is that coming to university with a disability can be quite, you know, confronting and difficult to navigate. And there's so much things going on, because not only do you have to come into a learning environment, you also have to navigate your disability and work through that. You know, don't, you know, get down on yourself if something happens. You just never know how things can turn around. And yeah, and lastly, don't be hard on yourself. We don't always get everything right. We might not always click with people or find it tough managing time and juggling life. It's a learning journey as we navigate our personal experiences. Just let people know how they can help and support you.
Yeah, I've been very positive this episode because university has been a really positive experience for me, but there are going to be people that you just don't like that much. And again, the difference between high school and university is that if they're really just, you're just not going to get along with them, you can just not see them. Because you can just go like, oh, I'll just go into the other end of this massive school, essentially. Where in high school, you didn't have that opportunity. And I think that's a great thing to just... And eventually, you might start getting along with some of these people, which is always a goal, to try and get along with as many people as you can. But yeah, I guess people aren't going to... some of the people are going to doubt your ability to do well in a university environment. When I was diagnosed at the time, I was straight up told that I would not do well in university, and I kind of used that as a driver a bit, I guess. But there will be people who doubt you, and people you just might not get along with even at first, or maybe even right now. And that doesn't mean everyone's like that, and don't let those single bad experiences deter you from the overall experience, because it can be a really positive thing.
Yeah, and like same with support people as well. You know, the first support person you might encounter may not click with you, but it doesn't mean that someone else won't.
Yeah,
so it's always like good to, you know, not throw those services away straight away because of one, you know, subpar experience.
So like when I was learning to drive, my first driving instructor and I, we were not very good buds. But my second driving instructor was a shout out, Chris. We love Chris.
On a different kind of topic that we did touch on as we were talking a little bit was just a couple of bits of advice would be to use your calendar and your diary, use it like religiously, put all your assignments in there, just block it all out into including, you know, when you're studying, your study times, and try to use I use timers to keep me on track with my studies. A lot of people already know the Podomo timer.
Oh yeah, the 20 minutes,
25 minutes on, 5 minute break.
Yeah,
I use that a lot, and it just keeps me focused. Especially, I have the problem with my ADHD of hyper focusing and giving more of my time to something than I should, and then something else gets like neglected, and so it's always a constant battle of like juggling all of that kind of stuff. So I use my calendar as a religious kind of diary to make sure this is what I'm going to do and then and when. But it also means if you do that consistently, it frees up time for social activities and having fun at university, because it's not all just study. And the last part would be just probably be mindful about when we're talking about grades. Because some people have worked really hard and get a grade, and then someone might turn around and maybe have a higher grade than you, and then all of a sudden be disappointed about that. And then that can adversely affect a person that might feel very proud of the grade they have.
Mm.
So just be conscious about how we talk about our grades and how we see them, because someone else's feelings of a grade might differ to yours. And so we just got to be conscious and empathetic to that, because someone might be really, really proud of their pass or credit or distinction or HD or whatever it is. But, you know, your vibe might cloud the other person's vibe.
Well, thank you both so much for joining me in the podcast. I'm sure a lot of people really appreciate your candor about this topic.
No, thank you for having us.
Yeah, it was a great time.
And that's all we have time for. So thank you so much for listening in to today's episode of Take Note. If you enjoyed the show, then please follow us on Spotify and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts so that other students can find us too. You can also head over to Instagram where you can follow us at uoa.oncampus. And feel free to DM us there with any thoughts you might have on the show. We would love to hear what you think. I'll see you next fortnight for another episode of Take Note.
Take note.
Take note.
Take note.
Take note.
Take note.
Take note.